This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
By popular demand, Place to Be Nation Wrestling returns to the Dirty South for Talkin' WCW, an episodic wrestler showcase designed to educate, evaluate, and entertain, with matches spanning the intimate stage of Techwood Studios to the heights of Space Mountain. Talkin' WCW presents the best, worst, and most surreal offerings from World Championship Wrestling. So cast your gaze to the Turnertron with hosts Jennifer Smith, Tim Capel, and Greg Phillips.
Hi, welcome to Talkin' WCW. My name is Jennifer Smith. I'm here with the AEW to my WWE, Tim Capel. How you doing, Tim?
Jennifer Smith, you are all elite. Tim Capel is all elite. I think Greg Phillips is probably all elite too, to be honest with
you. Who ain't?
But we're here to talk about, something that I have called AEW's spiritual successor, and that is WCW. We've chosen someone who I'm kind of surprised it's taken us this long to get around to, but we'll get into that. Let's bring in the aforementioned Greg Phillips. Greg, how you doing, my buddy?
I am doing great. I believe I am the Impact Wrestling to your AEW and WWE respectively, is not an enviable position to be in, admittedly.
No, but
I'll take it, I guess. I'm watched by dozens of people on Access TV each week. So
yeah, well, make it sound like we're giving you the rub, but you're giving us the rub.
That's right. I have a long-standing history. I've changed my name a few times. I used to be known as just Gregory. Now I'm Greg. So, you know, I'm trying to separate myself from the sort of risque content of my past.
I see. Very good. Well, on Talking WCW tonight, we are going to be talking a superstar you may have heard of. I don't know. He's somewhat accomplished. His name is Stunning Steve Austin, and this was Jenny, I think your choice, is that right?
No, I think it was Greg's.
No, it was mine. Yeah. I'm the one that chose that mealy mouth little bastard.
Ah, wow, stand mistaken. Greg, what was your rationale in choosing this guy that, you know, done a few things in wrestling, but he's been out for so long? I mean, probably, you know, we've got listeners who, this guy retired before they were born. I mean, what's the big deal, really?
That really makes me feel bad, Tim.
What did he even do?
Now I'm ancient.
Yeah.
Anyway, yes, I chose this individual. For those who don't know, he would go on to become quite the popular star of Tide commercials, Stone Cold Steve Austin. One of the more prominent stars in the wrestling industry. And I went with him because everybody, pretty much, if you're a wrestling fan, knows about Stone Cold Steve Austin. If you don't, go back and watch all of his great shenanigans on Peacock or the WWE Network if you're overseas, and see all the great shenanigans that he went through in the Attitude Era. He was awesome and everybody loves him. But what many people don't think about enough or talk about enough was his run in World Championship Wrestling under a totally different name as far as character goes. He was Stunning Steve Austin, as you pointed out, and rather than being the foul-mouthed, beer-swilling, bald-headed Texan, double-stunning candy ass that he was in the WWF, he was more of a... You know, it's interesting. I don't really know how you would describe his persona. More in the vein of a Ric Flair type character, a Hollywood pretty boy who spoke with a Southern accent for reasons that were unknown, and wrestled in sort of this classic heel. He was a wrestling heel, I guess you would say, a classic wrestling heel, Nick Bockwinkel, Ric Flair-esque, and had actually, what people forget about, a pretty good run in WCW. He was never a top star. He was never a big attraction per se, but he was always a very, very reliable wrestler in the ring. He built a reputation for having good matches, good promos, was always reliable to throw out there in the mid card to carry a show. Had a lot of great rivalries in WCW, a lot of great matches in WCW, and really carved out a pretty strong legacy that if he had never gone to the WWF, he would have been remembered as a good wrestler. Of course, he would have never reached the superstardom that he did. And also, I think people will find it interesting if they revisit some of these matches. His wrestling style was much different. He was more of a technician, more of a classic cheating heel, as opposed to what he became famous for, which was brawling and you know, having these sort of what we know as the Attitude Era main event style of match. That's not what he was doing in WCW. And yet he was also very good at this style. So yeah, I thought it would be a fun trip down memory lane to show somebody a different side of one of the all-time greats.
Well, I like it. And I thank you for it. And it is interesting how I had the same sort of dilemma of how do you describe WCW Steve Austin? He's he is a heel through and through. I mean, he never has a run as a face at any point in the promotion. But
not
sort
even
of
a de facto face. Like not even those. Sometimes you'd see those heel matches and one of them would kind of be the de facto baby face. He never even had that as far as I'm aware.
Right. He never even worked as a baby face. And he was sort of, just in that constant mid card, maybe on the cusp of breaking out. Mm-hmm. It seemed like people like for the entirety of his run were just sort of waiting. When's this guy going to take the next step? And it just sort of never happened. Comes in pretty, pretty green in the early 90s, but hooks up with the Dangerous Alliance. I mean, kind of the biggest heel faction of the promotion. Not kind of, they were the biggest heel faction of the promotion in the absence
hey,
of...
Hey, 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 hey. The York Foundation was still around for part of it.
For part of it. Okay. Once the York Foundation is out of the picture, I was going to say... Once the Horsemen were out, but
he could have very easily have been stunning Stephen Austin.
Yeah. Oh my. Well, think of how good that might have been. Yep. Yeah. We'd be having a different conversation, no doubt. But I mean, that was a pretty big vote of confidence. I think early on that, he could be a card carrying member of this group. And I didn't have maybe the best look at first. For starters, he had that Richard Tyson hair. Very good. Sort of a hockey hair look going on. as you put it before the show, he had the Mike and Ike tights.
Yeah, Mike and Ike's all over his trunks there.
And it's around this time frame that we actually are going to be talking about our first match. And this one was chosen by me. And it is Stunning Steve Austin defending his World's Television Championship. So he's also he's a singles title holder now. So that's nothing to shake a stick at either. And he is defending that against Barry Windham. Now, Barry Windham... One of many opponents of the Dangerous Alliance. And this is just one of those great singles kind of showcase matches within that very long ongoing feud in 1992. This was from May 9th, and it is WCW Saturday Night. This, you guys, is actually a rematch from like 2 weeks earlier where... they had a 2 or 3 falls contest. Windham actually beat Austin clean in the first fall, but then they go to a time limit draw. The television time expires. So as is often
good,
the case.
Good thing you didn't pick that match for Jenny's purposes.
I appreciate that.
Well, I tell you, I watched it and I was like, because I wanted, I kind of wanted to pick something under the radar, right? As I often do with my match selections. And I was like, I know that Austin and Windham did some good work. Let me check this out. And I watched it and I was like, it was okay. Again, it was Hockey Hair Steve Austin, Mike and Ike Steve Austin. And I'm like, it's maybe not the best representation. Then it went to that draw, and I'm like, yeah, this isn't going to work. And I thought maybe that was going to be the best I could do for those two. Then I realized, oh, they had a rematch 2 weeks later. Now we're talking. And this, really, this match gave me everything that that earlier match did not, because right from the jump, we have Steve Austin. He now has a haircut. So this is what I like to call stunning Steve Austin's white nationalist haircut. I know that sounds very unfortunate, but it is a more fitting look for him than the mess, the mop that he was sporting earlier, I think.
Yeah, so, I would agree. And he sports that haircut better than Ric Flair did a year prior.
This is true. Maybe they should have given him the Spartacus gimmick. I don't know.
He's going to be Spartacus.
Going to do some more fantasy booking here. So anyway, and by the way, this match has a rather more clean finish. So spoiler. But this really was everything that earlier match was not for me. And I was so happy to find it. But we get a guest ring announcer of all things. This is, you guys are going to have to help me out.
The great Rhubarb Jones. Rhubarb Jones introduced as the greatest DJ in the world.
He is
a country music DJ out of Atlanta. I looked this up right before the show. And I wanted to also bring attention to our commentary team for this match.
Thank you. Yes.
Which is good old JR, Jim Ross, in the prime of his younger days, alongside none other than the lead singer and chief songwriter, I presume, of the great country music supergroup Alabama, Randy Owen. Mm.
You know, it took me halfway through the match to realize that that's who that was with JR. Because I didn't watch the rest of the show.
Oh,
right.
I watched the beginning because I could not miss the introduction of Randy Owen and his awkward interview with Ravishing Rick Rude, where he asked him why he left the WWF.
I'll have to go back and watch that.
You got to do it. You got to watch it.
Well, I'm glad that that we cleared that up, because you guys are from deeper in the South than I am, so I'm kind of like going, Randy Owen? Okay, is that anybody? Maybe if you're from further South than I am. Rhubarb Jones? I really got nothing.
Now, I had never heard of Rhubarb Jones in my life, but Randy Owen, yes. If you live in the state of Alabama, Randy Owen is known to you.
Excellent. So y'all came through for me there. That was a gimmick that WCW Saturday Night would do for a while, right? They had the guest play-by-play. It was always Jim Ross, and they would sometimes bring in a guest of some repute to do play-by-play with him for these shows.
And that's something I didn't realize until getting ready for the show, actually, because that was I didn't have cable at that time during 1992. I think all my wrestling watching was syndication. So I missed this era of WCW Saturday Night. I was strictly a worldwide watcher at that time, and main event.
Okay, yeah. Well, the earlier match between these two, I watched a bit of that intro, that WCW Saturday Night. It was JR and Bill Frelick, who he forgot to introduce. He brought him out, and I was like, who's this, some wrestling guy? I was like, for a minute, I was like, is that Tom Zink? And it's like, it took him forever to get down to the stage. So I was like, I don't know if JR just had a brain fart or what, but he completely whiffed on actually saying who this man was until about halfway through. He did actually refer to him as Bill Frelick, and I was like, oh, okay.
Maybe JR just didn't like him.
Could be
buried him on purpose.
That cracked me up.
I got something you can do, Bill Frelick. Go fuck yourself.
They cut that part out. All right, getting to this match here. This, by the way, is another 2 out of 3 falls contest. So it's a straight rematch that you're doing here, which makes a lot of sense. You know, it was indecisive first time around. Got to run the match again. But what we get is a very tentative feeling out process to start. Both guys sort of hesitant to lock up, But eventually, Austin does take Wyndham down with a side headlock. Wyndham rolls him onto his side for a couple of pin attempts there. But Austin is able to regain control. Wyndham then hoists Austin into a belly-to-back suplex, which was a really cool sequence you don't see too often. Not only does he hit the move, but Austin still hangs on to that headlock, does not break after the suplex. But a second try does successfully break the hold. We get a snapmare by Barry into a rear chin lock. Then he transitions into a headlock of his own. So good bat-based stuff here in this early going. But Austin sends Wyndham into the rope. Wyndham comes back with a big body block, which looks so impressive, a man of his size doing that. A little do-si-do sequence and a big drop kick by Wyndham. Couple of strikes from Wyndham. Austin answers with his own, follows up with a knee lift, and that takes Wyndham off of his feet. Austin, though, misses two attempted elbow drops, so that allows Wyndham to come back with big back body drop, and a punch sends Austin to the outside, real stiff, but referee does not call for the DQ there, seeing some discretion on that over-the-top rope disqualification rule, right, where, oh, if it's your own momentum carries you out, it might not be a DQ, but you can't throw him over. It's always so funky with that. My heart skips a beat anytime somebody goes over the top rope here in early 90s WCW. In any event, Austin gets back in the ring first, so he tries to attack Wyndham on his way back in, but Wyndham is able to counter to a side headlock. Austin backs Wyndham into the corner, whips him into the opposite side, but Wyndham does get a boot up to block that, and then blasts Austin with a lariat for a cool near fall. Wyndham executes a really beautiful float over vertical suplex, but that is not enough to put Austin away. Notable here, that is the move that won him the first fall in their earlier match. I guess you could say Austin is maybe learning from that match, anticipated the move, was able to escape. Wyndham then lays in a rear chin lock. Austin is able to escape that with, of all things, the stunner, which not really, but it's that, you know, it's that jawbreaker, which was used to break, you know, anytime somebody gets a rear chin lock or sleeper, you know, back before it was actually a finishing move. But I it kind of tickled me seeing Austin do what would ostensibly be his finish.
Proto stunner.
Yeah. So a short arm clothesline by Austin, and he follows with a head scissors. Austin then hangs on to the ropes to press his advantage, but is caught by referee Anderson, who forces a break. Wyndham then scores a big DDT. Looks like Wyndham has a busted lip at this point, and he might have gotten that hard way off of a right hand from stunning Steve there. But in any case,
you're Wyndham, saying I potatoed him?
I think he's pretty green. It's only 92, so he might have called him, clocked him one. Barry gets Austin up onto the top rope, hits his superplex to net him the first fall. And
I love that float over superplex. Always
It is so cool. When I feel like we see it somewhat rarely, honestly, but that to me is like his signature move, more so than shall we say the claw, which we were making fun of earlier. But I really popped to see a Barry superplex there. So clean as a whistle goes that first fall. We get a brawling start to the second fall here as Austin is battling back. You can tell he has a much greater sense of urgency now, fighting from behind. Takes control after sending Wyndham to the outside with a back elbow, and stomps on him on the way back in. Gut-wrench suplex followed by a vertical suplex from Austin. He grounds Wyndham then with a camel clutch. We do get an inadvertent, possibly, low blow from Wyndham to break that. Questionable, but a little savvy veteranship there, if that can be a word. But Austin then flattens Barry with a clothesline. Austin sends Wyndham face first into the turnbuckle and then puts him away with his stun gun finish. So, you know, we talked about the stunner more being more commonly associated with Stone Cold Steve Austin, we know. Well, Stunning Steve Austin used stun gun. So
I always liked the stun gun.
Looks pretty cool, and you can. It's one of those moves you can pop off real quick. No real size limitations on who you can really execute that move on. It's I don't know. You call it a four quadrant finisher, but it's a three quadrant at least.
Well, the camera missed the whole last fall. Anyway, we didn't really get to see it.
Yeah, the camera work maybe wasn't the best, but again, this is WCW 1992. So, what do you want?
Thank God for replays.
What do you want? Actual production?
What are you doing, Jackie Crockett? Get in there.
Yeah. So we start off that third fall now, and deciding fall. Austin laying in the strikes, and he sends Wyndham to the outside, suplexes him back into the ring from the apron, but Wyndham does escape that pin attempt. Pace Austin with a right hand, maybe a receipt there from earlier, hits a jawbreaker, but then Wyndham misses a dropkick, and Austin is able to capitalize with a scoop slam followed by an elbow drop from the middle rope. Austin lays in a rear chin lock, and then we kind of battle back and forth over that, and he transitions into a front face lock ultimately. Feels like here maybe Austin is putting in the deep freeze, trying to run out the clock once again. Whatever allows him to regain the title, whether he can win here and go 2 out of 3 over Barry, or just, again, run out the remainder of the television time remaining. Either will suit his purposes. You're getting the sense now. Mm-hmm. Paulie is taunting Barry from the outside, by the way, doing, his great job as manager. Wyndham does battle to his feet ultimately, but he gets whipped into the ropes, goes back down on a back body drop from Austin. They tease a ref bump here, but, Randy Anderson, he doesn't get totally wiped out. He just sort of gets his bell rung, and mm-hmm. he's distracted long enough for Paulie to toss Austin the world's television title belt. But Austin Wyndham ducks the swing from Austin, sends Austin into the ropes, rolls him up on the rebound, gets the 1-2-3 just in time as referee Randy Anderson recovers. And that nets him the World's Television Championship. So, goes clean, about as clean as it gets. Two out of three falls over Austin. Post-match here, we get a beat down from Stunning Steve. And he walks out, does Steve Austin, with possession of the World's Television Championship. But is no longer the recognized champion. So, wow. I really thought this was a hidden gem, you guys. Mm-hmm. This is a match I'd never heard people talk about with any, specificity other than, Austin and Wyndham, they kind of had some good singles and tag stuff here and there. But I didn't know this particular match existed. I was really happy, and I thought really lucky to find it, because I got to tell y'all, I started my research for this episode pretty late. And when I don't know in advance, what match or matches I'd like to review and consider, it typically takes me a long time to settle on a match. But this was we'll throw it on, see how it is. And I tell you, it gave me everything I wanted. Just a real barn burner of a TV match. Again, under the radar. Hidden gem, awesome, Saturday night main event. And again, even improved on aspects of the earlier match that I watched that I thought was kind of a bust. Mm-hmm. Much better look from Austin and just a much better showing from both guys. Just going bell to bell, real even match. Nobody really had too much of an advantage for too long, I felt like. It was... Mm-hmm. Very back and forth, but in a way that really worked, and complemented both of their styles. So I was super happy, super surprised, but super happy with my choice here. I was not to toot my own horn, but I thought I did good,
toot,
y'all.
Toot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we should toot your horn a little bit. This was really good. A little funny about when I was making notes for this match, because so a lot of times, because I write, you know, by hand when I make notes, and I'll just put like initials for the wrestlers. So I find myself writing BH for Barry Windham, and then I'm like halfway through.
And it's for Barry Windham.
I'm like, why am I writing BH for Barry Windham? This should be BW. And then I realized that the reason I was doing that was because we say Barry Windham.
Because we always say Windham.
And so my brain just switched it to an H. And then I was like, I am an absolute moron. So half of my notes say BH.
God, we're so stupid.
We're so stupid. Okay, so that being said, take all of my wrestling notes very seriously when I tell you them.
I love that you shared that, though.
I couldn't not share it. It was so stupid. all of my opinions about this match are very intelligent, but that part was very stupid.
This is serious business. This is pro wrestling.
This is wrestling. I mean, come on.
So I liked in the beginning of this episode when you guys were talking about how you couldn't really kind of describe Steve Austin, because I had the same like kind of thoughts myself when I was thinking, like, because I like to compare wrestlers. Like, I feel like he gets a little bit of this or a little bit of that. I couldn't even come up really with the Ric Flair comparison, although I feel like that's fair. And I don't know if maybe that's like a byproduct of like knowing the future of Stone Cold Steve Austin and like not knowing where to put Stunning Steve. He also sort of gives me, like, just from what I know about Shane Douglas, a little bit of a Shane Douglas thing.
I can see that. Yeah, I never put that together, but I can kind of see that. There's similar wrestling styles, I think.
Yeah, a little bit in that era. And then like heelish too, and just full of added, like, he, when he walks out with the belt, like, you just got fucking beat in 2 out of 3 falls, but you took the belt with you. Like, you know, just that attitude. It's just very, with him and Colonel Parker, it's just a very, like, a menacing vibe. So anyway, and Polly Dangerously too. So anyway, I like this match. I think Barry was sexy as hell in this match. Is that weird?
Well, no, I mean, he can do it for you.
So, hey, a lot of hotel cleaning ladies agree.
Why do they have to be cleaning ladies?
That's who we like to beat off for.
Did they walk in on him?
But he comes out with like his hair kind of like in a like a sort of a pretty casual ponytail, and he keeps it in for like some of the match, but then like I feel like as he gets sweatier and like more serious, he kind of like rips it out of his hair. I thought that was really hot. So but he, like, what I liked about this with Barry was he just kept getting thrown out of the ring. Like, he would just always just end up on the floor of the ring, like in each little, after each little, during each little kind of point in the match, before the falls. And then we got a little blood. So he got a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
His lip busted open, it looked like. So that was good. A lot of, like you said, the head scissors and the headlocks and the holds. Although that is normally not working for me, like, I thought they worked them really well.
I don't think any of them went on too long.
No, they did. It was like that's just when it enough
doesn't. Sleep. Yeah, that's when it doesn't work for me. When you can tell it's truly just a rest hold. Mm-hmm. But here, it felt like both men trying to press the advantage, and you know they would actually work the move, which helps a lot too, or just to add to the legitimacy and you know the presentation of the match. As opposed to just laying on a guy with a chin lock. Like that.
Yeah, exactly. Silly. And I feel like there was enough like clunkiness and like, and not everything was real smooth. Like it was just like a battle, you know, and there was enough clunkiness in there to like make it feel like a real fight.
Mm-hmm. Did you guys see Barry Windham with the, what I have to say is probably the the laziest leapfrog attempt I've ever seen, where he raises his leg up.
Yeah, a little bit.
And they start to get worn down.
When you're that size, you don't have to get up.
Yeah, that's what I call the Kevin Nash leapfrog.
Just lift your leg.
Yeah.
I mean, he's so huge. Like, it's amazing.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah. He looks great. Like, you know, he looks amazing in this match. But, you know, having Paulie on the side is always going to be a game changer, I feel like, in a match. And he did not disappoint in helping Steve lose the belt.
Well, how about sometimes those backfire on you.
Yeah. How about the prominent, loud Paulie sucks chant throughout the match?
Yeah, fans were into it.
Oh yeah, they were. They
getting
were
on him. Yeah, a lot of kids in the crowd, which is just something, you know, you're not used to seeing with wrestling shows today.
No,
you forget about that kind of glorified studio setting of WCW Saturday Nights, where it's, I mean, they had the goofy such a goofy like entrance like theme to the show. It starts out like you're going to be watching an America's Funniest Videos or something. Yeah. And then it transitions into a wrestling show. And you're like,
I'm going to have that song stuck in my head. Thanks, Tim.
Yeah. Well,
America, well. America, this is you.
Anyway, and then like I fully expected Austin to win this match. So the huge pop for Barry's win was like amazing. And then his absolute, like, he looks completely checked out after the beatdown. When he hits him with the belt and then does a stun gun on him again, like, holy crap. He looks like his eyes are empty when they replay that. So, I mean, just awesome stuff all around. And I would agree this was a hidden gem.
Definitely. I agree as well. I thought this was a terrific match. And I was a little surprised, honestly, because I love Barry Windham. But, you know, the rep on him, fair or unfair, is that 90s Barry Windham is not nearly as good as 80s Barry Windham. Mm-hmm. And probably on the whole, that's true. But this was an indication that he still had plenty left in the tank in 1992, because he puts in a hell of an effort here. And I could be wrong, but I feel like he was sort of the captain of this match. He was, you know, Austin's still young and relatively inexperienced, and they have a hell of a battle here. Both guys working hard. I love headlocks. I love headlock takeovers and hammerlocks and stuff like that, especially when, you know, as long as they're working them working in and out of them and making it feel like a struggle. And I just love matches that start that way and build off of that. And I thought they did a great job here with that and working off of it and building the wrestling exchanges to the point where when they did get into a fight, it felt like it was earned, like it had built to it. And when they start slugging it out, it feels, you know, like you talked about that big right hand that Barry hits him with near the end of the end of the match, that felt like it had been built up for some time. So it's like a big move. Austin sells it really well. Each guy registers at the right time throughout the match. I liked the fact that Austin got the rare clean heel win in Fall 2 with his finish, which almost never happens in those days where the heel actually beats the baby face with his finish. Granted, it was Fall number 2, but still, I thought that was really cool. A very good gesture on Barry's part, because most baby faces of that era would have been insecure about that. So that was kind of cool. Although he did do the sort of my shoulders up at 3.001 deal, but nonetheless, great first fall with the superplex. I already talked about that being a move that I love. And the finish was great, man. Just, you know, the cheating backfires for once on Paulie and stunning Steve.
Yeah.
Barry gets the dub. Austin's not hurt any by it. He's still the young up and coming heel. Barry gets a surprise win. They build it as an upset, and also gives the baby faces a little bit of momentum heading into the War Games match, which was a couple weeks later. So I have nothing bad to say about this match. I thought this was terrific. I think it was also representative, Tim, of what the TV title always represented to me, which was when it was done right, a guaranteed great TV match every single week. And the fact that them doing the 2 out of 3 falls stiff, I thought helped it a lot. It added prestige to it. And it really, you know, Stunning Steve was a great TV champion, the same lineage as Tully Blanchard was before, as Arn Anderson was before, as Steven Regal would be after this. It's sort of the ultimate weekly heel champion, almost a modern evolution at that time, modern evolution of what the traveling heel world champion had been in the prior generation. So I was a huge fan of that belt, and the matches like this are a big reason why.
Well said, my friend. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If anything, the only thing I might ding that, and it's not a ding on the match at all. It's that it goes back to a point that Greg, you made about it seemed like this was maybe more of a Barry Windham match than it was a Steve Austin match. You know, like if we were doing an episode on Barry Windham, I could see,
which we will at some point,
which I'm sure we will get to at some point. Yeah, he's got to be on the list. Like it's like, well, this is one we already talked about, but is a really good, as much as it's a good Steve Austin showcase, it's like a great Barry Windham showcase too.
Oh, showcasing sure. That ass.
Showcase well, for say, Jenny.
You know, how you know, you talk about you know, your celebratory antics by Austin and Paulie after the match. Yeah. How do you guys reckon Barry Windham might have celebrated his television title victory that night?
Well, he might have made a hotel cleaning staff person very either uncomfortable or happy.
No judges. It's a judgment-free zone here. I'm talking WCW.
People are going to think that there's some story behind that, and there's absolutely not.
No. I don't know Barry Windham from a hole in the ground.
You don't know if there's a story behind
that. People are going to think that, oh, man, that's a story I haven't heard of.
No.
Let me Google Barry Windham Hotel cleaning lady.
Listen, this is not Klondike Bill and the glass table. This is not.
People are Googling now.
This is not the boogie woogie man and street prostitutes throughout the United States. No, this is just a good natured fake story from the wonderful fake world of wrestling.
Yeah, we need to start a new sleaze thread.
I agree. I think people sleep on that sleaze thread because of how influential it ended up being in the industry.
Started by Tony Khan.
Absolutely, I choose to believe that. I know, even though it's been proven false, I choose to believe it.
Damn it. All right, so
horse dewormer for all.
Horse
yay.
Yes, for everyone. For your brains. So after this, of course, we go into that awesome some would regard as the greatest WCW match of all time, that 1992 War Games with the Dangerous Alliance. We talked about that one on our War Games episode, I do believe. Mm-hmm. But once the Dangerous Alliance is no more, we get an interesting turn for Stunning Steve. I almost called him Stone Cold, where he begins teaming with Brian Pillman in the Hollywood Blondes. So you would think that perhaps we're going to have a tag team match with the Hollywood Blondes versus, I don't know, one of their major rivals like the Horsemen also here on this episode. Well, if you think that, you can just go fuck yourself. Because we stepped
You're goddamn
right.
Right.
We stepped right over the Hollywood Blondes run, progressing through. Look, maybe we'll do it on a Pillman episode or something.
The only thing that's for sure about talking WCW is nothing's for sure.
Exactly. Plus with tag matches, I mean, let's face it, you've got 4 opportunities to talk about any given tag match on an episodic podcast such as this one. Anyway, all that is to say, covering our tracks, our next match is after the Hollywood Blondes have imploded, although this is perhaps not the last statement on this team for the night. Austin is back to being a singles heel now, managed not by Paulie Dangerously, but one Colonel Robert Parker. No slouch in the hotel room.
How about you Google department. Him?
Yeah, Google. I understand.
He has a jump rope academy. Is that correct?
He does.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Real jump rope aficionado. Anyway, Jenny, this I don't know why I'm.
You're quite eloquent tonight.
Yeah, I really am, Jenny. This was your pick.
No, it was mine actually.
Oh my god.
No, it wasn't.
What are we doing? This was not my pick. Whoever's pick it was.
Are we talking about Starrcade 93?
No, we're talking about Clash. I thought we were talking about Clash 25, right?
Okay.
Is it? Are we? When was Clash 25?
Clash 25 was a month before Starrcade 93.
Oh, shit.
Oh, okay. Well, you're right and I'm wrong. So
we'll just cut this part out.
Yeah, we sure will. I sure did it the wrong way, but that's fine.
It's all good. It's all good. That's fine. Think I'm right about that. Maybe I'm wrong. It's possible.
No, you're probably
I'm
right. I'm sure I did it wrong.
But nonetheless, it does come to us from November of 1993. And this is the 25th Clash of the Champions, affectionately known as Clash 25. Because it's the 25th Clash, you see.
Oh, so, is that how that works?
The 25th. Look, the 25th anniversary of the Clash of the Champions.
That's exactly right.
Just if like you don't know what an anniversary is.
That's exactly right. Like the 25th anniversary of WrestleMania 25.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, this was the implosion or explosion, whichever nomenclature you choose to utilize here, between the Hollywood Blondes, who had been the hottest tag team, I think most would agree, of 1993. Certainly within WCW, I would argue in the industry as a whole, certainly in North America, the hottest, most despised heel tag team that had so many great matches with Steamboat and Douglas and Flair and Anderson and others, I'm sure. And nonetheless, they were a great tag team with some of the best promos in the business at that time. This was really Austin's coming out party as a promo, I felt, was during the Hollywood Blondes run. And then they had they came up to him backstage and told him they were splitting them up, and Austin said, well, I don't want to split up. And then Dusty said, sorry, that's with somebody else. And then they split them, and they put Austin as a solo heel to pursue the United States Championship. But before he could do that, he had to take care of his old running buddy, Flying Brian Pillman, who was coming into this match on Clash 25, angry at his old partner after Colonel Parker had warped him and betrayed him. And for those who don't know, Colonel Robert Parker is also known as Robert Fuller, who was a big time wrestling legend around these parts where I'm around, Dothan, Alabama area, huge legend around here. Anyway, he's a great manager in WCW. We reviewed a match with him before, a War Games match, in which he famously yelled out, "They busted something inside me." And so this bout starts out appropriately enough hot and heavy, because Pillman is pissed off at Austin, and he pursues him, and he's beating the hell out of him, chopping his chest with just these horribly debilitating overhand chops to the chest that are just lighting Austin up. His chest turned into hamburger meat real quick. Pillman's pounding on him. Austin takes a powder, and Pillman goes after Colonel Parker, chases him around the ring. Him and Austin get into a brawl at ringside. They're going all over the ring. This is high. You know, we talked about the last match kind of starting out with headlocks and headlock takeovers and things of that nature. This wasn't that. This is a high-energy affair the entire time. And I ain't talking about Owen Hart and Coco Beware here. I'm talking about a high-energy, high-octane match. So they're going at it really – really fast throughout this thing. Lots of strike exchanges here. Austin's slugging away. He's trying to slug away at Pillman, and Pillman keeps avoiding it and unloading on Austin. And this really feels like two guys that are going out there. They would rather be still teaming together, and they're going out there to just steal the show. Mm-hmm. And without having watched the rest of this clash, I have a hard time believing anything else would have topped it on that show, because they really are working hard here. Pillman has the crowd support behind him as they're eager to see Austin get his ass whipped, appropriately enough. And yeah, it's just great exchanges back and forth. Austin gets a little bit of heat on him, but Pillman controls a lot of this match. You get the impression watching this that Brian Pillman is the better man and he's going to get his revenge on this occasion. But as these things often go, the outside interference rears its ugly head, and Pillman fights back from underneath, overcomes obstacles along the way, has Austin down and ready in position for the air Pillman as he's going to the top rope for the springboard, and Colonel Parker trips him up, knocks him over, and Austin puts him away and gets the 1-2-3 and sneaks out of this clash with a victory over his partner. And unfortunately, without following the WCW Saturday Night matches, this was close to the end of the run for this rivalry. They never really got a chance to have a big pay-per-view blow-off, which I know was a sticking point for both Austin and Pillman. Austin has really complained about this era of his career in a lot of documentaries and that he never wanted to split up the blondes. But nonetheless, he has defeated Brian Pillman here. It's the first big singles win for him in quite a while in WCW since before the Hollywood Blondes formed. And you really do feel like this is the end of a chapter. And Pillman would go on to do not a whole lot, quite honestly. He would be kind of miring in the mid-card of WCW for quite some time before he reinvented himself with the Loose Cannon character about 2 years later. So all that being said, guys, what did you make of this match? I thought it was quite the reason I wasn't even planning to choose this match. I actually had another match from a year prior picked out going into this, but then I watched this and I was like, you know, I really like this match. I don't remember it being as good as it was. So for me personally, I quite enjoyed it. What'd you guys think?
I enjoyed it as well. You know, it's kind of funny because I feel like this feels like a Tim match. And then I feel like Tim's pick felt like a Greg's match. But anyway.
I can see that.
I really like in the beginning of the match when Brian starts chasing Colonel Parker around the ring. And then he just gets annihilated with a clothesline on the outside by Austin. And that just sets off the whole thing. It's just like the rest of the match is just pretty much Pillman getting his ass beat. Like where him and Wyndham were very pretty evenly matched. I feel like Steve gets over on Brian most on this match. And
can I just say Austin throws one of my favorite clotheslines.
Oh my God.
Always has.
Yep.
So I feel like Brian is definitely the one in this match that is learning as opposed to leading it. You know what I mean? Like they were tag team partners, but I don't know. There's like a weird vibe in this where Steve feels like obviously more accomplished wrestler. Was that their dynamic when they were tag team partners?
No, quite the opposite. In fact, when they were a tag team, it was like Pillman was kind of even though they had been wrestling about roughly the same amount of time, Pillman was presented as more of the veteran, I think. You know, it's been many, many years since I watched this stuff, but it feels, I think the difference that you're seeing is the presentation and that WCW clearly valued Austin way more than they valued Pillman.
Yeah,
definitely. Which is ironic given how things would end up for both guys in the company. But not at that time, it felt like they had Austin earmarked for single stardom and they had Pillman earmarked for nothing.
Well, that comes through in this whole thing.
It also maybe feels like Austin is working this match with more of a chip on his shoulder than maybe Pillman is. Mm-hmm. I don't know what Pillman's thoughts on the whole breakup of the Blondes really were. I'm sure he wasn't happy about it either, but to hear Austin talk about it, he was really salty about it. And yeah, he just feels like he comes in here with maybe more of a sense of purpose. I mean, for one thing, he is the heel, so he's, you figure he's probably going to be calling the match, but he's really hustling out there.
Oh, yeah.
More so than just a typical heel ring general type of, which was a typical match model, but it kind of comes across more aggressively, I thought, in this match.
And I think Pillman just inherently brings like a lot of chaotic energy to a match.
Yes.
It's not like as developed as it will be, like you said, later on when he does lose Cannon, but there are flashes of it here. He's still like amazing, fun to watch. Nick Patrick still sucks. Like, why? Please. Like,
you gotta get on Nick Patrick.
I cannot stand it. Anyway, I like the backdrop onto the ramp that Pillman does get on Steve, one of the few big moves that he gets. And then after that, he just eats a boot and gets his face slammed into the railing. A lot of there's a sick DDT on Austin for a two count later on. But, you know, Colonel Parker again is another game changer. But I really like this match. I like knowing what I know about their team and their breakup. This is, you know, I wouldn't say a hidden gem, but it's an interesting match to watch for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it is that for sure. I do think it's a shame we didn't get more of a singles feud between these guys, like spilling over into pay-per-view. I didn't need something to last like a whole year, but at least give them like
they should have had a Starrcade match.
Yeah, like give them a Starrcade match. What we get at Starrcade, and we'll talk about soon, I guess, is, I mean, it's
what?
Yeah, excuse me. It's not bad, but there's all, it's sort of like, was there any reason you couldn't do Austin Pillman? Was Pillman hurt or something? I don't get it.
I think it was as simple as they just didn't value him at that time.
Yeah.
Which a mistake.
Imagine not valuing Brian Pillman. I mean,
right?
it's
unbelievable.
It's insane. But yeah, that I enjoyed the activity in the match. And I, to your point on the Nick Patrick thing, I don't hate him to quite the same degree that you do, but I will say that he has a cadence that bothers me.
Yes.
And always
because
it's has.
Wrong.
It's because wrong. When he drops down, it's almost like there's an extra
count.
That's
a one count. Yes.
Yeah. Like there's a one count. Almost every referee in the business, yes. That's a one count. But with him, that's just him dropping to the mat. And then there's three extra counts after that. And
I think
at times it throws off the crowd, I think.
Yes.
At
and
least
the announcers too, they mm-hmm. have to adjust to that because a lot of times they're like, well, what are we calling it?
At least keep your counting arm firmly raised if you're going to go down like the way that he does. It's just weird. It is good that this match does have some oomph to it. It's not just a total, it doesn't have a clean finish, but I mean, they get some time. They do bust their asses out there. Austin wins and you sort of move on from it. So, I mean, it's not nothing. I just wish they had.
There was been more in the tank, with, I felt like.
There was. There was just definitely more in the tank.
I think the blow off to this whole feud was a chicken suit match between Pillman and Colonel Parker, if I'm not mistaken.
Are you serious right now?
I seem to remember that happening at some point. Yeah.
That makes me angry. Full angered by that.
Yeah. I don't blame you. God, and I'm watching back on the replay, the finish here with mm-hmm. Pillman going for, you know, Eric Pillman. He ate shit.
Yeah.
When Parker, you know, tripped him up. I mean, he goes down right on his head. Damn.
He is brutalized. Really.
On the one, you know what, I will say on the one hand, it's sort of like just doing this kind of one big TV match and then moving on from it. At least it doesn't remind you of the fact that they foolishly broke up these two from a team that was very accomplished and they should not have broken up when they did. And I guess it's ironic in a way, Austin never wanted to be in the tag team in the first place and then realized he had sort of stumbled into a good thing. And now it's being taken away from him again. It's like,
yep. Although Jesse, the body on commentary here, is lamenting about the Hollywood Blondes breaking up. And he says, maybe this match will get it out of the way and they'll reunite. They were my favorite tag team, Tony. I really want these guys back together.
A little bit of editorializing
mm-hmm.
from the body.
Not
the
from Jesse.
Yeah. Oh, we'll get to that in the Starrcade match.
Oh, I know.
All right. Yeah. So I think I've said what I've, what I came to say on that match. But anyway, bit of a missed opportunity, but good for what it is.
All right, before we get to that Starrcade match, tell you real quick, just a reminder to rate, review, and subscribe this fine network. It is called PTB Wrestling Network. You can find us everywhere that you listen to podcasts. We also have what we call the Quad of Pods. So you can also subscribe and rate and review the PTB Pop Experience. Tim has a lot of great shows over there right now. He will tell you about at the end of the episode. And basically anything TV and movies you can find on that feed. Also, the NOSO, the North South Connection. I have a couple of great shows over there as well as Tim. And so always need your reviews for that as well. So check out NOSO. You can visit our Amazon store and help us out with any purchases there. Just go to placetobenation.com/Amazon and doesn't cost you anything, but helps us out a little bit. And check out placetobenation.com each and every day. You'll find all the links for all the podcasts, all the written stuff, and the entire archive on the website. So check that out as well. All right, so Starrcade 93. That was my pick. Steve Austin versus Dustin Rhodes. Now, we've talked about Dustin before. I don't remember if anybody mentioned this match when we did our Dustin episode.
They do call him the natural, of course.
Yeah, we did a dedicated Dustin episode. If anything, this might have come up as an honorable mention, but you know, they've had a few encounters of Dustin and Austin over the years in WCW. They had that, real early in Austin's run, and like, help me out, Greg, 91. I think they had that match at Havoc. Which is not real good.
91. Yep.
Mike and Ike era, Steve Austin, Hockey Hair, Steve Austin. It's not great, but did they have another match at Havoc in 93? Or am I thinking of this match we're about to talk about?
No, I think you're right. They reference on commentary that they had a match.
Thought so.
And I think they said at Halloween Havoc. That in which there was blood involved and there was like a non-finish of some sort. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen that match in many, many years, so I can't remember the details of it. But they were mentioned it on commentary.
In any event, I think this is a good bit better than either of those previous encounters.
Is there anything that y'all want to fill me in on as far as setup for this match?
Not really. I mean, the only real setup, I think, was that Austin had been chasing that title for a couple months at this point, mm-hmm. In between his battles with Pillman, and that he was, he was really gunning for Dustin's belt. Dustin had held the United States title for most of 1992. He had traded it with Rick Rude a time or two, but he had been either holding the belt or the number one contender to the U.S. belt for the entirety of 92. And one thing that I do think is cool is that we really have illustrated the graduation process in WCW. So Austin started with the TV title and Dustin started as a TV title contender. And by this point, you fast forward a year or two, and now both Austin and Dustin have graduated to the U.S. title, which, of course, as we know, is the stepping stone to eventually get you to the world title. Unfortunately, neither guy would be able to get to that next level, but I think that's kind of cool of illustrating the way that it used to work in wrestling, where most guys start out with the third title, go to the second title, and then eventually make your way to the top title.
Or stall out indefinitely and never go to the main event. Yeah.
All right. So this is another 2 out of 3 falls match.
It is.
Yeah. Popular, I guess, this era.
Popular with us, maybe.
Yeah. Jesse, before the match starts, he says, I thought Richard Petty's son was Tom Petty of the Heartbreakers.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then Tony is just like, No. You don't spend a lot of time in North Carolina, I think is what he said.
Yeah. Now, did you watch the Richard Petty?
I did not.
I did.
I mean, it's a Kyle Petty. Kyle Petty's his son, and he's on the show being kind of seems to know his stuff a little bit.
Yeah, I thought he was pretty good, yeah.
But it's just funny because come on, it's WCW and NASCAR.
Leading into their NASCAR roots, yes.
Yes.
Well, you have to understand, also, at that time, NASCAR was actually popular. People watched it.
Right.
It's not like when TNA would do this 25 years later, 50 years later, and nobody watched NASCAR anymore. Yeah.
Fucking asshole.
But, yeah, that was cool. But the best Jesse is in this whole time was his random rant about smoking.
Oh my God!
He says, "How come I don't ever see Colonel Parker light one of them stogies he carries around?" Well, Jesse, and Tony's like, "Well, Jesse, you know, it's the '90s. Most of these arenas have smoking ordinances in them." And he goes, "Well, that Rush Limbaugh says we ought to be thanking the smokers. Rush says that we ought to go into schools and be handing out cigarettes to children. That's what Rush says." And Tony's just like, "All right."
He also says, you can't call the Hooters girl the natural.
And Tony tries everything he can to avoid it.
He kind of stumbles. So that was cute. Anyway, this starts out sort of like the Wyndham match does. A lot of grappling on the map. And a lot of talk from Tony about how evenly matched these guys are. I guess I would agree with that. Dustin still looks great, you know, and he's like
big beef fed Texan.
Yeah. I mean, he sort of looks like Barry Windham, I guess, if I'm being honest. But they bounce off the ropes a little bit, but Austin catches an elbow and slides out to walk it off a little bit, which is what he will do quite a bit in this match. Every time Dustin gets one over on him, Austin slides out.
He even calls for a timeout.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So that will be. I actually kind of really like it. It's a lot of attitude by Steve in this. A lot of strategy, I guess, by him.
It's stuff you don't see heels do it anymore, really.
Right. Yeah. He tries to bait Dustin out of the ring a lot, and Dustin is very, very smart and does not fall for this because Colonel Parker is waiting outside the ring there.
A little thing that I really like, you only mentioned it because you mentioned it a second ago, they run the ropes a little. This is a really random observation, but it's something that I've noticed about Austin over the years, particularly Austin before he got injured many years later. I love the way he runs the ropes. Mm. Such a random observation, but I love the way he runs the ropes. Like, he's attacking the ropes, and he creates this – it actually looks like he's building momentum as he runs.
Yeah,
in a way that a lot of guys don't, and it's a really random thing, and maybe I'm nuts, but I've always noticed that about Austin from this era, and even from his early era in the WWF, of just like the dude hits the ropes and it with such ferocity,
a lot of authority. Yeah.
A lot of them just kind of fall on it, just like as a break, you know, and he just like absolutely attacks it. I like that observation. They tease a test of strength and then go back to the mat for a little bit. Dustin works the arm a little bit, and then Steve escapes again to the outside. This is when Jesse starts wondering about why Colonel Parker doesn't light up his stogie. I don't know. I would kind of like to see him smoking it too. But anyway, I mean, Marlena smokes later. So, I mean, why? I don't see why we can't smoke it. Anyway. Yeah.
Well, that's because Vince McMahon doesn't care what the authorities say.
Dustin gets a two count on a sort of a shaky backslide. He kind of like was countering another move and kind of got into a backslide. Not a great one, but it makes Steve run off again. So that's good. He finally gets Dustin to the outside for a little bit. But then Dustin tosses his ass over into the fourth row for his trouble. So he is not taking any shit. Dustin's like real unintimidated. Like as much as Brian looked shaky and off balance and a noob compared to Steve, like Dustin is like not taking any of his shit, you know, big punches. Big elbows, of course.
The bump that Austin took over the guardrail on that.
Oh, my God.
That was good stuff. Yeah, hell yeah. they grab a headlock for a little bit. Some more punches. Good punches, I like. I like the punches in this match. As Colonel Parker kind of berates Dustin, shouts insults at him a little bit from the side like he does. Dustin gets tossed out and then gets another close two on a sunset flip. And then Austin sort of like does a couple of like lazy covers, like he's, you know, fucking around, not really trying to get the pin. Also, Nick Patrick continues to suck. Nothing has changed from our match last month where he sucked. He will suck after this as well. Dustin wakes up the crowd a little because they're kind of into it. They're kind of meh at this match, but Dustin starts getting them into it a little bit, showboating a little bit. He throws Austin over the top rope onto Colonel Parker on the apron, and then the bell rings because Dustin has been DQ'd for that.
Yes.
So not the sexiest of first falls.
Have we talked about this before? What are our thoughts on the over the top rope disqualification rule?
I think it's stupid.
Yeah, I've always really, I just hate how inconsistent it is. It only matters when they feel like it should, or when it suits their purpose. It's so just, I don't know.
I went through a phase where I liked it, because I was like, okay, well, I like the fact that there's an extra way for the heel to cheat, and it's kind of cool. But at the same time, now I find myself going back to exactly what I thought when I was a kid, which was their target audience at the time. I hated it. I always hated it. I never understood it. I didn't know why. Why is it any worse to throw them over the top rope than through the ropes? That doesn't make any sense. It's like, you know, what, a foot difference maybe? Like, why is it okay for somebody to throw Ric Flair off the top turnbuckle, but it's not okay to throw a dude over the top rope? Like, I never liked it. I think it's a stupid rule, and they shouldn't have ever done it. It's not as stupid as the Bill Watts don't jump off the top rope rule. pretty stupid nonetheless.
So there's supposed to be like a 30-second rest period after the fall, but Dustin is very pissed off, so he just follows them down to the floor and throws Austin by the face into the ring post. Meanwhile, Colonel Parker gets carried out. I'm not sure, was he bleeding? Like, because they don't really show him as the event staff comes and, like, rescues him off the floor and just takes him to the back. Like, he's out after this.
He may have fainted, and because throughout the match, he was looking around to see if Sid Vicious was going to appear and come after him for some reason that I can't remember now. But I think Sid Vicious had been his charge at one point, and they had fallen out, and so he was worried that Sid was going to come up and attack him. And then in the midst of the craziness of this United States Championship contest, I believe he was distracted by that. Maybe
fell out.
That's gotta be it. So now the arena becomes haunted because the light starts flickering, and it's a weird moment. It's like it was planned too, because like as soon as the light starts flickering, the spotlight comes on the ring. So it's like, I don't know. I know it wasn't planned, but it was just very odd how quickly.
It was a really interesting how quickly they adjusted to that.
Yeah.
Like that was very almost instantaneous.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, so did they know that was going to happen? I don't know. It was very weird. So it made for like an awkward point here. And I don't know if like maybe the lights flickering threw them off or something, but I felt like they kind of lost their rhythm at this point. So they get the spotlight. Dustin gets a big suplex at that point while the spotlight's still on. The lights come back on. Dustin gets Austin over in the corner and is punching. And then, so because he's standing like on the second rope, and then Austin just kind of like shoves him down off the top there, and just kind of pulls him up by his tights. Quick little roll up and pin for the second fall, and wins the belt sort of unceremoniously.
The rare two straight falls.
Kind of weird. And it was one of the reasons that made me pick this match, because I don't typically see the straight two falls, even though the last even though they were both like kind of questionable, the top rope and then the tights pulling for the second one. So it's like, it's definitive, but not kind of an odd finish. I really like this match though. By the end of it, Steve is just like busted open and totally bleeding all over the place. So I wish, I don't know if there was something else planned for this. Maybe they just called it because of the lights. I don't know. I just thought all this was real interesting and love seeing Dustin work and interesting vibe here with Austin.
Yeah, well, it wouldn't be a WCW match in 1993 without the fucking lights going off.
Yeah.
In the middle, especially like Dustin was about to come off the top rope with something and you got to figure of all times for the lights to go out, that maybe rattled him a little bit. And I agree that they kind of feel like they lost a step after that, just trying to readjust. And this is sort of, in a lot of ways, similar to that match I picked, not just because it's two or three falls, but Dustin is, I started to say a great value Barry Windham. I don't think that's really fair, fair to him. But
I not mean, maybe overall, but like maybe feeling
in 1992.
This match,
yeah. But, you know, I definitely liked Dustin's confidence here and agree that he does show a lot of fire, gives it right back to Austin. They have pretty complimentary styles. And the two going two straight falls by Austin, it's unorthodox, but would have been my preferred, you know, kind of finish to this. Not maybe not exactly, but I do think that sort of thing does need to happen in wrestling. Just
I agree,
because if it doesn't, then it just feels like
the same.
Everything's the same. Yeah, yeah. And
it's that argument of once in a blue moon a world title match should be a squash match.
Yeah,
should be like, it should be over super quick, just so that you have it in your mind that it could happen,
just because shit happens sometimes. Yeah. And I think the only business exposing absolute that there should be in wrestling is the heel should always win the coin toss for a war games like that.
I think that's been proven over time. Yeah. Every that's time you deviated, absolute. It's been weird. Yeah.
Yeah. That is your only absolute. Anything else in wrestling, you have to mix it up a little bit. Even if it's maybe going to lead to a inferior result, just for the sake of, you don't always know what's going to happen. You do it. And we get some blood in this match, which is certainly welcome. Nice. I mean, major big bumping by Austin. Man, going over
that. He's really found himself as a wrestler at this point, I think, as far as the in-ring goes.
Yep. Not exactly the pinball that like a Mr. Perfect or a Shawn Michaels are, but he can still bump with the best of them.
He can.
So I really enjoyed his selling. And it's like, you know, Dustin will live to fight another day. Like he lost that first fall on kind of a fuck finish. Wasn't really his fault. And then slipped on a banana peel for the second. And I don't know. Like, I know they don't have much more after this, at least from a high profile standpoint, but I am sort of tempted to go on like Cage Match or something to see if they had any like TV rematches or anything.
Yeah, it seems like there's kind of like the Pillman match, just maybe something left there.
Yep.
Yeah, they I like the two straight falls thing just because it's different. And I think different is often good in wrestling. For the same reasons that Tim laid out, that you want to at least have the idea that it can happen. So you have to do it once in a while. So I thought that was cool. I like the fact that he cheated. You know, the first fall was, everybody knows that was cheap with the over the top rope lame rule. And yet it was sold as Dustin made a mistake. But the second time it was more straightforward. Austin cheated by grabbing the tights. I like that too, because a lot of times in modern wrestling, you'll see guys cheat and the announcers play it off as, well, that was a smart move by him. Even whereas back in the day, they'd be like, what a cheap move by bad guy X. And so I liked Austin cheating here and it being clear that, you know, we don't really know who the better man was between them. Dust, you know, like Tim put it, slipped on a banana peel. And I thought it was a nice hard hitting match. They beat the hell out of each other with their strikes were really hard. Like the blood. I love watching Austin take back drops, back body drops. He does that really well. It's art to watch a good heel take a back body drop. And so really enjoyed the match. I didn't think it was like a classic or anything, but it was a good match that illustrated, I think, the strengths of both guys. And certainly, as you guys pointed out, seemed to set the stage for what could have been a hell of a blow off. It may have happened. This is an era of WCW where I'm really hazy on. Mm-hmm. So it was nice. It's nice to go back and revisit matches like this that show that there were some good things in a time that as a kid, I wasn't really enjoying WCW very much. So, that's good stuff there. And, these guys always had good chemistry, as far as, you know, physical chemistry in the ring. Their matches weren't always great because of booking and stuff, but mm-hmm. they always seemed to have good physical chemistry all throughout their careers. And so I enjoyed this match. I dug all three of the matches that we watched tonight. I think it's illustrative of however one would say that word. it is that of how good Steve Austin was in WCW and how quickly mm-hmm. he got good. He comes mm-hmm. over in 1991, and by 1990, certainly by this point, by the end of 93, he's one of the better workers in the company, and consistently having very good matches with a wide array of opponents. And I've always wondered what could have happened had WCW held on to Austin and been a little patient with him in the Hogan era and given him a little bit of a chance to shine. Obviously, it's best for pro wrestling that it didn't work out that way, but because we wouldn't have gotten what we got. But Stunning Steve Austin was a worthwhile character in and of its own. I thought. And by the way, as great as Paul Lee was awesome, the Dangerous Alliance was awesome. But for me, when I think of Stunning Steve Austin, I always think of him with Colonel Parker. I think that was a great pairing of manager and wrestler. Always enjoyed it. I think that was Parker's best role in WCW, period. That was the most that I enjoyed him in WCW. So I really thought they were a great fit for each other.
I really like him with Colonel Parker as well.
Makes a lot of sense, too. Yeah.
All right. So honorable mentions. I feel like there's kind of a lot here. At least I had watched like mm-hmm. a good handful. Of course, I don't think that we could get by without talking about Steamboat.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised none of us went with a Steamboat match.
Well, I think because it was almost so. I think it was because it was so obvious. Because every DVD set they do of Austin, pretty much the only WCW matches they include are something from the Hollywood Blondes and one of the Steamboat matches.
Mm-hmm. And like that random Sting match.
Right.
Yeah, I'm surprised we didn't get any Sting on this one.
I wish they had had a pay-per-view match. They never had a big pay-per-view match with each other, or else you guys know I would have picked it. But but yeah, I watched a Steamboat match as well, Jenny. Chad Campbell actually suggested one that I had never seen before from August 1st, 1992, a TV title match with Steamboat and Austin. And it's not as good as their 94 matches, mm-hmm. but it's it's a good indicator of how much Austin had improved and also an absolute masterclass of selling by Steamboat.
I'm not as into those 94 Steamboat matches. I don't know what it is. There's just something that doesn't totally click for me. Like, even the best one, I'm like, it's fine. Doesn't rock my world. Otherwise, I probably would have picked one of them myself. Certainly some of the Hollywood Blonde stuff. I mean, that him and Pillman versus Flair and Anderson at
the Clash.
Yeah, whichever Clash it is.
Which is also, I believe, a two straight falls, two out of three falls match.
I don't remember, but I'll take your word for it. I even like the at Beach Blast 93 Blondes against Anderson and Roma, which, I mean, I know it's Paul Roma, but
yeah,
I still think that match is kind of pretty decent.
The cage match at Slamboree against what's supposed to be Steamboat and Douglas in mask, but it's Steamboat and Tom Zink in a mask, I think. Dos Hombres, and that's actually a really great match. And they had several great matches with Steamboat and Douglas earlier in the '93.
Oh yeah, yep,
yeah.
Even though it's Shane Douglas.
Yeah, even though, yeah, unfortunately. I had tweeted out a recommendation I got to Bobby Eaton and Dustin Rhodes versus Arn Anderson and Steve Austin.
Ah, yeah.
That was a fun match, too. I enjoyed watching that.
What year was that from?
Let's see.
I think it was
this was worldwide. And
yeah.
91 it would have had to be, right? Mm-hmm.
I feel like it was.
Because it would have been Babyface Eaton. So, yeah, that's interesting. That's cool. Yep. I have to check that out at some point.
It says November 23rd. That was my mama's birthday, 1991. Mm. So that's on YouTube. So that's a fun watch if anybody wants to watch that. Any other final thoughts before we wrap it up?
Didn't he also have a match with Ric Flair at one point? One match, I think.
A singles match.
On Saturday Night or Worldwide or something like that.
Sounds right.
I can't remember. I thought about just going with that just out of the curiosity of it because I always thought they'd have a great match with each other, but I don't remember if it's any good or not. I don't know if I've even seen it. As far as matches I remember, he had a pretty good match with Sting on one of the TV shows that we were referencing a minute ago. I like the Steamboat matches usually were pretty good to me, and then I liked the he was always a great tag wrestler. There's a match with Austin and Vader against Flair and Sting, I believe is the match. And it's really really good. I enjoy the hell out of that match.
I would have watched that actually, because I was kind of going down the list of options and saw that and considered it, but I was like, I just don't really have time to futz around this.
And of course, who can forget his classic with Hacksaw Jim Duggan?
Oh Jesus. Naturally.
Ooh, yeah, brutal. Okay, so I'm seeing. Nope, that's not a singles match. I'm looking on cage match. Yeah. I'm not seeing at least any televised singles.
Oh wow.
Between them, but you know, it could happen on a house show.
They have a couple of tags, I guess.
They do, yes. So, but anyway, I think that about her. When was the that kind of shockingly decent match he had with Johnny B. Badd? I think that was in 94.
Probably 94, yeah.
Because I can't imagine.
I think I've seen that.
Yeah. I can't imagine he had anything shockingly good with Johnny before 90, because nobody did.
Oh, this looks like it would be fun. From Saturday Night in 94, Sting and Ricky Steamboat versus Ric Flair and Steve Austin.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Yeah.
They're only like 6 minutes though, so it's all.
Oh, well. Yeah. Speaking of short matches, he had a match with Macho Man on Saturday Night that's really short too.
Oh yes, that's actually what I was thinking of when I said the random Sting match. I was thinking of the random Macho Man.
You think oh, that's going to be awesome, and it is while it lasts, but it's only like, I mean, it's like 5 minutes or something like that.
Right. Oh, okay. Here we go. Austin and Johnny B. Badd, Slamboree. And then they had a rematch at Clash 27. So I can't speak to the Clash match, but I think the pay-per-view match is kind of all right. Did some stuff on Worldwide also, which we'll never see.
It's almost like he's a really good wrestler, you guys.
Yeah, almost like a really good TV wrestler at that.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's almost like he's a fucking genius and a legend. And
yep.
Yep. All right.
He really sells me on those Tide things.
He's an amazing salesman.
Yeah.
Get you these Tide gimmicks.
So I think it's my pick.
I have no idea.
Pretty sure.
Because what was our last episode? War Games?
War Games. That was you.
That was me. So it's definitely not my pick.
Yeah, I had debated on this, but I feel like we should probably talk about Chris Jericho.
Okay.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. WCW Chris Jericho.
Yeah.
The Ayatollah of rock and roll.
So I've watched some of his stuff recently, and he's real fun. So I think that that will be a very, mm-hmm. a very fun episode to get into, because he is quite unique. Like, he, I don't know. He was just always kind of doing his own thing for the most part, you know?
At one point in 1998, Chris Jericho was probably my favorite wrestler.
I can see it.
With Bret Hart not doing much, Jericho was probably my favorite wrestler at that point. And he was certainly the most entertaining part of Nitro for me most weeks.
All right. Well, I can't wait to dig into that one. Greg, do you have anything that you want to plug before we get out of here?
Not particularly. People can, if they so choose, can follow me on Twitter at gphillips8652, a name that I am not changing, despite the fact that I should. And other than that, I have nothing of value to promote.
What about you, Tim?
I don't know if I have anything of value to promote either, but I'll do so anyway. Check out, again, within the quad of pods, right here on Place to Be Nation Wrestling. In addition to this fine program, we have PTB NXT. That's you and me, Jenny, with our friend Jacob Williams. We're trucking along, and the year 2014, we're into the fall, right up in that, kind of on the Sami Zayn title quest, if you can call it that.
The never-ending quest, yes.
The never-ending, it will have an ending. I promise you, we'll get there. So check those out if you're a fan of NXT. On Place to Be Nation Pop, I was a panelist recently on a Making Mount Rushmore. This was a superheroes edition, so I wanted to get in on that action. We actually chose our Mount Rushmore of Marvel heroes and DC heroes. We had done Marvel villains and DC villains in a real early edition of Making Mount Rushmore, but hadn't done one for the heroes until just recently. So, the panelists, we all agreed on like 95% of our choices, and mm-hmm. and still got to do a huge argument nonetheless.
I think we all agree that the real heroes are the presidents who are memorialized on Mount Rushmore.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
There's an all-time Tim promo on that episode.
Promo, personal attack, whatever you want to call it.
I would just recommend it highly.
I don't think the panelists, I don't think anyone's has been that amused to be attacked in such a way as my fellow panelists were on that episode. Anyway, check that out if you're a fan of superheroes and that kind of high-minded discussion. Jenny, on the Jenny position, we will have a new talking pop. We've been brainstorming what we want to do with mm-hmm. some special talking pops coming up. But in the meantime, check out our interview with our friend James Gruenberg most recently on that show. And on the North-South connection, 9021 NOSO, continuing on, that is JT Rosero and myself and a rotating guest for each episode, just going one by one through 90210, the OG. Get in while it's still hot, because we're in that first season up to like, you know, episode 6. We're going to be talking some unfair curves in a very difficult history class. These are the hot topics of West Beverly, the crappy teacher who Brandon Walsh is gonna set straight, and that's with our friend Eric Eels. So you'll look forward to that one real soon. 9021 NOSO on NOSO. You can find me on Twitter. I am at Syke68. I'll not change that either. Thank you, Greg. CYKE68. On Twitter.
So perhaps somebody should make a Mount Rushmore for us, since we're taking such a brave stand on this issue.
Yes, heroic.
Tim, you're always on my Mount Rushmore of anything.
Oh, thank you.
So my stuff you can find at the Jenny Position. There's a new episode of You Heard About Pluto with my friend John Casalecka. We talk some Party of Five.
Another great 90s primetime drama.
Nah, great is stretching it. But,
hey, it was pretty great in its way.
Well, season
not
five.
Not season five.
Okay, well, that's
it. It was unfortunate.
Also, my opinion may be colored by the fact that I was like 13 years old and hormonal, so
right. Yes.
I had other reasons for enjoying the show.
Look, there's a lot of sexy incest on that show. I can't blame you at all, Greg.
I don't even remember there being incest on the show.
No, I just always like was so confused about that show because I didn't know who was together and who was brother or sister.
Who was in the party? Yeah.
Yeah. So I was very confused. They actually
never released the parenthetical before. The title was actually Sex Party of Five. They couldn't put that on Fox for obvious reasons.
Yeah, obviously.
They wouldn't have won that. That Golden Globe with
that title. We're gonna take that Golden Globe away.
Barry Windham was a big fan of Sex Party of Five.
He watched it in his hotel room.
He definitely did.
So I have some shows over on the North South Connection as well, with TNA Never Dies and the returning Extreme Three Way Dance, with a new co-host on that show, Mr. Matt Souza. So. Join us for some ECW talk on that. It's a good time to jump in if you've not listened, because we're doing sort of a little bit of a reboot on that show. And you can find me on Twitter. I link everything I do there, and that is at JennyPosition. But thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you next time.
And as always, buy the shirt.
Inside Joker or a sleaze thread story.
That was something I made up either as JR for a song on ACTF or during our ill-fated Watchmen experiment.
I think it was a Watchmen.
Yeah. I think it was in Watchmen. I think it was like JR Shack talking about Barry Windham masturbating in a hotel room for some reason. Yeah. Those are the two. I don't know why. It's like Barry Windham just my go-to for stories like that because it just seems like something he would have done. I can just see Barry walking in those cowboy boots into his hotel room and, you know.
Taking a couple muscle relaxers.
Muscle relaxers. Giving himself the old proverbial superplex into the Kansas. Putting the iron claw hold on his insert word here.
I like how you get bashful at that point.
Yeah, I don't want to say the word. But no. Hey, speaking of awesome things like Barry Windham and his hotel rooms. I was so happy to see that one of our matches still had Steve Austin in his, what I called, his Mike and Ike trunks. Yeah, those are my favorite wrestling trunks of all time, the Mike and Ikes that
are
Austin
used to
wear.
Are you serious right now?
They're not my real favorite.
Okay.
But everybody, you know my favorite, so real favorite tights are the Bret Hart tights, but nonetheless. I always thought they were hilarious. Like he was wearing Mike and Ike's on his trunks and it was funny. And then he stopped one day and things were never the same. I knew then that he would fail miserably in the wrestling business when he stopped wearing those Mike and Ike's.
Without question.
Yep, you're right.
And he cut his horrible long hair off. Mm. So, you know, he's just some short haired guy.
Yeah, who cares about that?
They're going after the lost jewels of the Kingdom of Alemania.
Oh, Lord.
Yes, or at least that's what I read.
Jewels of the Lost Kingdom of Alemania.
That's the name of my memoir.
What an oddly specific name for you.
Oh, that right. Then I don't even do any of that. Just call it that.
Romancing the Jewels of the Lost Kingdom of Alemania.
It's my favorite Michael Douglas film, actually.
Mine too.